89.9 Zone. Al Letson wins a Peabody Award. Just ahead, a conversation with the State of the Reunion host. Good Tuesday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. First Coast Connect, always live on the radio. And now, catch our daily podcast on iTunes. Just ahead, don't miss it as we welcome Peabody Award-winning host Al Letson to the studio. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, today's book club pick, It's Dreaming in Cuban, a story that's more timely than ever. Plus, we'll celebrate the return of the Jacksonville Greek Festival to the fairgrounds. All of that ahead on the show. But first, he's a playwright, a poet, and a nationally renowned public radio host, one we are proud to call a colleague. Our own Al Letson is also now a Peabody Award winner. Letson's program, State of the Reunion, won a George Foster Peabody Award for its 2014 season. It is the highest accolade offered in the broadcasting business. I'm pleased to welcome my friend and colleague Al Letson to Studio 5 to talk about his show and what's next. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
And get on the line now at 549-2937 as we discuss State of the Reunion. It's a look at how cities across this country see community. 549-2937 or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. And kudos to you.
Thank you. Thank you. This is a complete team win. I have a great staff that I work with. We went out and did it. Last season was a really ambitious season for us. We wouldn't have been able to do that if we hadn't been here at WJCT. And we went out and did it. So I'm quite happy and proud, and I work with some amazing people.
You really do. You have a great team. But still, accolades are well-deserved to you, Al. You're from Jacksonville, and several years ago, you entered a contest that NPR was sponsoring to find the next great public radio talent, and you won.
Yeah, crazy, right?
It's great.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. I believe that the key to, I don't want to say the key to life, but I believe that it's important, like when opportunity knocks, you open that door and welcome it in. When I had the opportunity to pitch a show, an idea, it's funny, like when the contest first started, they were asking for shows and ideas, and the show I pitched was State of the Reunion. I didn't know what that meant. I just had an idea, and me and Taki Telenidis and my business partner, Ian D'Souza, we got together and started figuring out exactly what that idea was in my head, what it sounded like as radio.
And what did it become? When you talk about State of the Reunion, to someone who's never heard the show, what does it mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think that like a lot of our news media talks about how America is falling apart and how all these bad things are happening across the country. Or our media concentrates on, New York City or Los Angeles. And the only time we hear the other parts of the country is when something bad happens. And State of the Reunion looks at it completely opposite. Like we go everywhere and I feel like we are the most diverse show in public radio. I don't have the numbers for that, but I feel like we are, primarily because diversity is a part of our building blocks. It's what we really think about. And so for me, the show is like an honest look at America, but from the point of view that the people on the ground are the ones that actually make change and move things forward. So it's a very, bottoms up type of program, which is, I think, a little bit different than what's happening in most media.
And we'll go to your calls with Al Letson in just a moment. The number to join the show and let us know your thoughts about what you think makes a community at 549-2937. We have a clip from the most recent season of State of the Reunion. What are we going to be hearing here?
Yeah, so every April I've been doing Poetry Month specials because, as a lot of people in Jacksonville know, poetry is my thing. And this, I had a friend of mine, Taylor Molly, give us a tour of several different New York night spots. And one of my favorite poetry readings in the universe is the New Eurekan Poets Cafe.
We're outside the New Eurekan Poets Cafe. The show's not going to start for another 45 minutes. And the line is, already. So this is what all poetry promoters dream of. Standing right to my right are 100 people waiting to get in and pay to listen to poetry and rather than stay home and watch TV. Anytime that we can get people to eschew their TV in favor of the written and the spoken word, It's a victory for culture.
There you go. There you go. Tonight we are going to have a poetry slam, and my name is Jive Poetic.
As far as I know, the New Eurekan Poets Cafe has been around for a long time, long before Bob Holman brought the slam here in the late 80s. I come in the late 80s when I come to a poetry slam and watch Bob Holman MC a poetry slam. He'd heard about it from Chicago, Mark Smith, but so what? I say that the New Eurekan Poets Cafe is Mecca for poetry slam.
A letter to the girl I used to be. Dear Emily, every time I watch baseball, a voice I no longer recognize whispers, Ethan, do you remember? When you were gonna be the first girl to play in the Major League Seattle Mariners rally cap. But to be honest, Emily, I don't. Dad told me that like it was someone else's bedtime story. But I do know you had that drive. Didn't let anyone tell you
that just gives you a slight sense of the richness and depth of State of the Reunion.
Yeah, the whole poetry episode came out excellent. I'm really happy with that one. And this new season we got is great. We go to the San Gabriel Valley, which I believe is considered the largest concentration of Chinese people outside of China.
Where is it?
That is like right outside of Los Angeles. Okay. It's like this hidden valley that most, you know, when you think of LA, you don't think of that. And we had a producer that grew up there. And so we did a really deep dive. I'm like crazy proud of that episode. It's excellent. So yeah, this new season's great.
So you go all over the country and you find communities that are sort of off the beaten path, but have a really rich sense of community. That's
yeah.
Sort of the way you go about it. How do you find the places?
I set out an agenda with my staff at the beginning of a season and tell them, you know, these are the things that I'm really interested in this time out. This is what I want to dive into. And of course, they tell me what is sparking their interest. And then we go out and we look for stories about that. We start off like looking at local, you know, news media in the local towns, which is always different than like the national media, right?
Sure.
I mean, obviously WJCT is a great example of that. So, you know, You go in, you look for that type of stuff, and then you begin to build out and find characters and go from there. So, and again, I can't say it enough. Like, I work with some amazing people. So I can just give them an idea and they come back and bring me beautiful things.
What are some of your most memorable episodes, most memorable places you've visited?
You know, so many. It's funny, like when I think back on State of the Reunion, I've had these amazing interviews. I spoke to this one gentleman. He was a Native American, and he was in Washington State. And his tribe had gotten so small that it was no longer thought of as a tribe. It was looked at as a band. And it was really clear that ultimately, like in the next 50 years, next 70 years or so, his tribe would be no more, his band would be no more. And there was a lot of hurt in his eyes. And I asked him about it. And he said, you know, you just have to hold on to the past in your heart and move forward into the future. And I think about that all the time. Like it hits me all the time, especially, you know, with State of the Reunion coming to a close. It's one of the quotes that I've kind of carried with me.
Actually, it's one that we all here in our department carry with us because we're pretty devastated that the show is coming to an end because it is such a gem. It really is outstanding, and we're proud that it's part of our broadcast day.
Yeah, I love the show, and if there was any way for me to continue doing the show, I would. The show ending has nothing to do with lack of desire. I got plenty of desire. I've got a whole, you know, board full of ideas and places that I want to go. I feel like, you know, if the funding was there, I could probably do State of the Reunion for another 10 years. But, you know, in this climate that we're in right now, funding a show like this is difficult.
And lots of calls for our Peabody Award-winning host, Al Letson, 549-2937. Lisa is in St. Augustine. Hi, Lisa.
Good morning. I actually wanted to just call and say how nice it is to hear two of my favorite shows being discussed in the same show with Melissa, your program, and of course with Alexa. I remember back when we started doing the show, and there have been several times where I've sat in a parking lot to hear the end of the segment that he was finishing And they're very thought-provoking, and they stay with you. I mean, it's not something I just listen and move on. It's something that I think is really powerful, because those ideas that I pull from some of his shows really have stayed with me and led to dialogues I've had with other people. I remember the one that he did in Miami about the Haitian connection with the Apple and community in Miami that was reaching out to help them. And then another show you did about transgendered, I believe, the individuals, that was also very powerful. So I'm kind of sad to just find out that the show's not continued. I guess y'all elaborated on that a little bit more, but I have to say what an impact State of the Reunion's had on me personally. And thank Al for his wonderful program.
Thank you so
Lisa,
much.
Lisa, thank you. Isn't that great?
That is. It makes me feel good. No, Lisa, if there was a way for me to continue doing the show, I absolutely would be doing it. It basically just comes down to dollars and cents. Creating a show like State of the Reunion, that is a national show, and we're on like 300 stations across the country.
Yeah, and if I could, let's just let's jump in and let's talk about the significance of your achievement for a minute, if I could. Sure. Brag on you. Jacksonville's own Al Letson won this contest out of hundreds of applicants, right? His idea was chosen to be aired on hundreds of stations all over the country, and he has been producing this show out of Jacksonville for how many years now?
When you include the development season, about 7 years now.
7 years. Mm-hmm. And so when you think about how competitive this environment is and how much talent there is out there, the fact that you were able to pretty much single-handedly get this on hundreds of stations is just momentous. And I just want to take a minute to congratulate you on that, too. In addition to the awards, and you've won many, just the sheer logistics of that and how hard it is to stand out, it really is. Jacksonville is so proud and lucky to have you as one of our own homegrown talents. And so I just want to say that.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's been a great journey, and I keep saying this, but like, I didn't do it single-handedly. I have like an amazing group of people that I've been fortunate enough to work with. They've you know, I definitely lead the program, and I feel like when you're listening to State of the Reunion, you are really listening to a reflection of me and the way I look at America, and I'm really proud of that. But I definitely have, you know, some people that work for me, and they're just amazing. You know, the reason why the show is ending, though, is just the economics of public radio is pretty tough. I think a lot of people automatically think that because we are on NPR stations across the country, that NPR, you know, actually pays for the program or helps out, and that couldn't be further from the truth. So it's just, you know, it's just the hard reality of where finances is in public media.
549-2937, Chuck at the Beaches. Hi, Chuck.
Hi. I was going to ask your writer, I'm a beginning writer, amateur, and I was wondering if you could talk about hearing yourself first, hearing, and then others hearing you. And then one of the things I do is I'll hear someone say a sentence and I'll write it down. Example, love, hear a sentence about love or something. Could you just talk about that and how you could use those things, I guess, about hearing yourself first?
Yeah, I'm not sure I understand the question. I would say when it comes to writing, you know, the basics for me is that I just read a lot, number one. Like, I'm a voracious reader. The other thing, probably the best advice that I got in about writing, I got from listening to Terry Gross. I swear my whole life revolves around public media. Terry Gross was interviewing Dennis LaHaye, and Dennis LaHaye said, the writer doesn't have to be the smartest person in the room. He just has to be the most observant. And I've made that kind of my thing, where like I sit back in a room and I just really try to observe people. And and I write that out. And, you know, I write like 10,000 bad words before I come up with, 2,000 good ones. So I think it's just a matter of to continue to keep plugging away and keep listening and observing what's going around you, and always, you know, keep feeding the beast, you know, keep consuming as much as you possibly can.
It's funny you say that. I saw an interview years ago with Seinfeld, and they were asking him how he comes up with his comedy. Mm-hmm. And he said, I'm really not a funny person. What I am is an observer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He said, I just, everywhere I go, I'm endlessly observing everything. And he just can't help himself.
Yeah,
that's
no,
just who he is.
I sit in a room and I watch people and I hear the craziest things. One time I was in New York and I was in Dunkin' Donuts, and ahead of me, this guy was telling this other guy this story. And the other guy looks at him and said, so how long has she been your sister? And the guy's like, since I was born, what are you talking about? You know, but it's stuff like that. That will end up in a play or something somewhere along the line.
You filed that away.
Right, exactly. You just put it away.
Now I'm starting to get nervous that we're all going to pop up as characters
in one of
your plays. Thinly veiled. Yes. 549-2937 to speak with Peabody Award-winning host Al Letson. Reggie in Jacksonville. Hi, Reggie.
Yes, good morning. Yes, I'm calling from Mandarin section of Jacksonville, and I just wanted to thank Al, first congratulate him on his Peabody Award, and certainly thank him for his show. I'm sorry it's going off the air. A few months ago, I was listening to his show. It profiled Portland, Oregon, Portlandia, and the fact that blacks had to live in a certain area. And that caused me to take a trip up to Portland the first part of March, and I did a little hiking and took a tour and learned a good bit more about how the blacks were treated during the 1800s, and the fact that they had to live in a certain area by law up until 1970s. It was still in the books anyway. Whether it was enforced mm-hmm. or not, I don't know. But anyway. Congratulations again, and I'll look forward to seeing you in other shows, I hope.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, that Portland episode is one of my favorites. Thank you.
And you are on another show now. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure. About last year or so, the people that actually brought me into radio, PRX, they called me up and said they were piloting a new show. They asked if I was interested in just doing the pilots. At the beginning of it, it was just literally, you know, just come in and do these pilots. We just need somebody. So I did that, and that show is Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting. And crazy thing, we won a Peabody for our first pilot.
So wait a minute. Technically, you are a two-time Peabody Award winner.
I don't really claim that first Peabody. Like
it's not the same as Ron Burgundy's 5 Emmys, let's be honest.
It's not.
But it's pretty darn good.
I want those Emmys though. But it's good. I mean, I just Peabody it was great, but it didn't feel it was mine, so I don't really claim it. Although I might put it on my resume, but the second one is mine. You know, the second one, I feel quite confident in saying that that I earned that one.
549-2937, George in Mandarin. Hi, George. Go ahead.
Well, good morning. Congratulations. I really, it's just wonderful. Wonderful show. Jacksonville is a city that is absolutely full of creative and talented people. Is there any possibility that you might do a local show celebrating the cultural life of Jacksonville?
I'm always down to. I agree with you first and foremost. I agree that there's a ton of creative people here. I think that the beautiful thing about Jacksonville is that you have space, right? That you can like create art and find your space in it, and that art can blossom. I see it every day in my office at Cork. I work with some amazing artists, so I definitely agree with that. I'd be down to look into that type of stuff. It's just literally like my schedule at this point is so bananas. I didn't go to bed till 2:00 last night because I was editing a show for a State of the Reunion. So, you know, my time is just getting nutty. So we'll see what happens though.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Producing this kind of program is a pretty labor-intensive affair.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, State of the Reunion, you know, to make an hour of State of the Reunion, it can take, you know, like 2 or 3 months. I mean, and we don't make 1 hour kind of, you know, we don't just work on 1 hour for 3 months and then work on another. We're usually like working on three different hours during that time. But the key there is that like all the producers are working on their individual hour, and then I'm working on every hour with every producer. So it's pretty labor intensive. But, you know, it was good labor. Like I love making it. And, you know, I hope to at some point come back to it.
In the meantime, the Peabody Awards ceremony is coming up. We're going to be putting on a tux when?
Yeah, that's at the end of the month. I will go up there and accept the award. And yeah, I got a new suit.
I'm so proud to call you my friend and colleague, and I wish you continued success. You are a true treasure. Thank you for being on the show, Al.
Thank you for always having me. I love WJCT. I love Jacksonville. You guys are amazing. In the last episode of State of the Reunion, I thank the entire city, every single person, because Jacksonville has raised me and supported me for so long. So I love this place.
He's Peabody Award-winning State of the Reunion host Al Letson. Much more still ahead. Later, toss back a little ouzo. The Jacksonville Greek Festival is returning to the fairgrounds. But up next, Dreaming in Cuban. It's our book club pick. Right now, here's how you can support 89.9.
The Beatles, just one of the groups you can hear on our new radio station, Relax Radio, on our HD3 channel. I'm David Luck and host of the Electro Lounge here with Michelle Corum, our news anchor for Morning Edition.
Why is that my favorite song?
It's because it's so pretty.
Yeah.
And it's funny when you think of the Beatles, how crazy all of our parents were. They were so bad. And then this and Yesterday came out and I was like, okay, they're not so bad.
Yes, right.
Like classics. Elvis did with Love Me Tender after all the rock and roll. And then suddenly, well, maybe they're not so bad.
Right.
And Yesterday is like one of the most recorded songs in history.
Right?
Yeah, everyone wants to do that.
Yeah.
So we're pitching Relax Radio. If you will give us a one-time gift of $120, we'll give you this great little portable radio about the size of your hand. It's got great sound. You can take it anywhere you want. You can play it in your car or at the beach or anywhere you want to be.
It's very compact.
Nice new radio station we have. You can also access our classical channel, HD2, 22 hours a day of classical music and a replay of Fresh Air and First Coast Connect. Or listen to us, HD1 89.9, in CD quality all the time.
I hear it's pretty good.
Sounds really good.
Yeah. But the radio, you can get one if you simply make a pledge of support for $120. So that is available the first time we've had this during a pledge drive, the radio, the HD radio. And I'm sure you will like it. And, of course, what comes with it, the music and entertainment that you get. So make a pledge of support right now. And to do that, you can simply call 904-353-9528. Again, that number, 904-353-9528. Those last four digits are WJCT. And make a pledge of support. We're calling it Fund Your Favorites, but we also want to make sure you get the best quality of radio transmission you can get by making this $120 pledge, and that radio will come to you. And it's really a great time to do this because we only ask a couple times a year of the year for people who listen to the programming to make a pledge.
And that's because of all of our great sustainers. We used to be on the air 5 weeks a year with these pledges. The sustainers have reduced this down to just 2.5 weeks a year because they picked their favorite show, whether it was Morning Edition or All Things Considered or Performance Today or Jazz Night in America, Car Talk, First Coast Connect. There's so many great programs. If you would just pick your favorite program and donate or invest in that program, $120 is just $10 a month. You would help us get to our goal of $80,000. We're sitting right at $21,500.
Okay.
We've got a ways to go. We've only got till Friday to make this, and we usually make our goals thanks to all these great listeners who support public radio. It's quality radio like Al Letson's show, like this program. They're just programs you're not going to hear on commercial radio.
Absolutely.
And the same goes for Relax Radio. We're up to 1,800 songs. Well, top 40 plays 40 songs. the other stations play maybe 150, 200 song playlist.
Fantastic
We're
library.
We're almost 2,000 songs of music. So it's typical of what we do at NPR. We do it better and we do it deeper and we do it more intelligently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
353-9528. You should call us right now and at any amount, whether it's $5 or $500. It all goes into the programming of this radio station and our sister television station. So if you appreciate what we do, there's one good way to show it, and that's by picking up your phone, grab your credit card, pick up your phone, give us a call now at 353-9528 or 1-800-722-9528.
We also have a way that you can fund that monthly amount through your checking account now, too. So if you give us the right numbers, we will set that up, and then it comes out of your checking account every month, and you don't have to worry about it, and there's no extra fees for WJCT to have to pay when it comes to credit card deductions. So that's a great idea, too, and that's also new, this pledge drive. They can help you out with that. But main thing is, go to the phone right now, 353-9528.
Welcome back to the show. Well, it's the bittersweet story of a family divided by politics and geography by the Cuban Revolution. Dreaming in Cuban tells the tale of Celia Del Pino and her husband, daughter, and grandchildren from the mid-1930s up to 1980. Her story mirrors the magical realism of Cuba itself, a country of beauty and poverty, idealism and corruption. Dreaming in Cuban presents a unique vision and a haunting lament for a past that might have been. But now, as the U.S. normalizes relations with Cuba, dreams, some of them, are alive once again. So, Dreaming in Cuban is our timely selection today for our wildly popular First Coast Connect Book Club, now in partnership with the Jacksonville Public Library. Book Club blogger Stacy Goldring is here now with two very special guests. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
Great. And you brought some guests with you. Can you introduce us to these wonderful people?
I am honored. I have here today with us Elian Snyder and Dr. Estrella Alfaro. And these two strong women are perfect examples of the experience that takes place in our book this month, Dreaming in Cuban. These women are Cuban exiles. And this is what's so amazing about book groups and discussions, is this is a springboard to talk about real life. So I want to start off by asking Elian to please tell us your story. Tell us a little bit of how you ended up here in America and what your mother had to do to get you here.
When I was about five, I guess, my recollection of Cuba is being late night, dark, and having to be escorted to a car, into a car, and taken to an airport and put on a plane, and landing here in Miami at the Freedom House, mm-hmm. and growing up here with that. I think the reason that we came to this country was because of my family's fear for my brother having to go into the military service. And at that time, Castro would send the military into places like Angola, Afghanistan, mm-hmm. and the Czech Republic.
And how old was your brother when your mother had to make the decision to really put her life on the line? Rescue her family?
He was 7.5, and I was mm-hmm. 5.5 when they made that decision, because they knew that, I believe at that time, the military, it wasn't like here where you're 18 or 21. It was more like right after the sixth grade, they would be sent to the camps, and then from there, they would go into the military.
So explain to me what happened, and our listeners, what happened to your mother professionally and your father professionally once you decided, Dr. Alfaro, to leave Cuba.
When they in the school, when I work in the school, mm-hmm. somebody pick a spray,
like spray paint.
Yes,
and they spray painted your school, of which you were principal, correct?
No,
It was your own academy.
Yeah.
No.
Do they spray paint graffiti on the school?
Mati.
Yeah.
Secretary of the school.
Okay.
Okay. And if I could just jump in, you asked this mother and daughter duo to come to the studio today because their story is so similar to the story in the book.
Absolutely.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So what we have in the book is, well, it exemplifies what we have sitting here before us, two beautiful, strong women who had to make a decision to rescue their family and flee a Marxist dictatorship. And we have three generations of women, and that's what's so amazing about Dreaming in Cuban. If you have not yet picked up this book, this is a book that tells the story through feminine eyes. We don't normally have historical fiction told from a female perspective, but these were strong women who had to leave. Their husbands were being sent to the military, just like what happens in our story. And we have one character, Lourdes, who decides to come to America and basically embraces capitalism. We have Celia, who stays and becomes the head of a committee for her little neighborhood. And we have Pilar, who's our second, first, third generation, whatever you want to call her, New Yorker, who can't decide. Is she Cuban? Is she a New Yorker? Is she an American? What is she? And it takes returning to Cuba like you had to do, Elian, to decide, you know, what is my identity as having Cuba in my blood? And that's what Dreaming in Cuban is about. Dreaming in Cuban, dreaming as a Cuban.
As a
Who
Cuban.
Am I?
Elian, what was that journey like for you, this process of nailing down your identity?
For me, I loved it. I took my daughter with us. At the time, my daughter was 14, and it's the same thing. My daughter is now a third generation.
Okay.
And she does identify with being Cuban. And for me, it was great. I loved it because I got to see all the things that I heard about that I didn't remember. For my daughter, it was absolutely amazing. She even did all her college papers based on entrance exam, you know, papers for college based on her experience in Cuba.
The author also went back to Cuba in the 80s, and that's what triggered her to write the book, Cristina Garcia, after going back and seeing, you know, what she idealized Cuba as and then what she really saw.
And to join our first Ghost Connect book club and discuss Dreaming in Cuban and let us know your thoughts on normalizing relations with Cuba when you call. The number is 549-2937. And I wanted to ask you your thoughts about the recent decision from the White House that the U.S. is now normalizing relations with Cuba. Americans now have much more free travel to Cuba, among other changes.
For me, I think it's great because after talking to people in Cuba that they've been wanting, my mother absolutely
she's
does not
head.
Want.
She's shaking her head.
Not. Yes.
Why are you shaking your head? You don't agree with the decision.
No. Never.
Por qué? Tell
I
us
never.
Why
not?
No. Because the embargo is lie. Never.
You can't trust the government.
Cuba.
No, you couldn't trust Cuba to do what they say they're going to do.
Well, and isn't there a real generational split in opinions on this among older Cuban Americans and younger ones? And your family seems to reflect that.
I think it's the belief, the generational belief that they still believe that if there is the embargo continues, eventually he will give up.
He will give up.
We'll bleed it dry.
And we realize after 55 years that it's not ever going to happen.
So what is the takeaway? What is the lesson of your experience, Dr. Alfaro, that you want people to leave with? I mean, you are a walking history book at this point, a beautiful walking history book. So what can people learn from this? Because, you know, I think it's a train coming and there's going to be relations. But what can we take away? Because what I see in you is it's family first.
My family, I don't have a family there, only one. Nephew, but I don't like to relationship with Cuba because communism is funesto.
Mm-hmm.
They destroyed Cuba.
They destroyed
Cuba. When I went there in 90, 201. Mm-hmm. The street, the Havana.
It wasn't what you remembered. Yeah.
No.
Let me just let people know, Stacy's pick, Dreaming in Cuban, it is our selection this month for the First Coast Connect Book Club. You can email the book club at bookclub@wjct.org. And if you go to the Jacksonville Public Library, Stacy, they will try to have extra copies of your picks on the shelves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, something that I didn't know anything about until I read Dreaming Cuba, I learned so much about this book. In fact, they should all be reading it in school as a primer, because Cuba's common, is that people were sent to work camps to be re-indoctrinated. And we have a character, Celia, who is sent to a work camp to cut sugarcane. Did you have a similar experience with work camps, Dr. Alfaro?
Yes, they
did.
Were.
Well, yeah, why don't you answer? Yeah,
What did your mom have to do?
All my family were professionals in Cuba, like I mentioned. And, you know, she was a doctor. My other aunts were also doctorates in either science or education. And they spent many months in summer camps cutting sugar cane, and especially if they knew they had applied to leave, then it was mandatory for after they lost their job to then work at the work camps until they came to this country.
And it's 549-2937 as we discuss our book club pick, Dreaming in Cuban. You can email your feedback about our book club to Stacy at bookclub@wjct.org. Hector is in Bay Meadows. Hi, Hector.
Yes, hello. Yes. I am glad that the embargo is going to go away, however slow or fast it goes. It's a good thing because we have China, who is one of our biggest trading partners, who is one of the worst offenders of human rights in the world. Mm-hmm. And we're trading with those people, killing thousands of people in China. But yet in Cuba, thousands of people are not being murdered. My grandfather on my mother's side came from Cuba. He was a black person, and there was a lot of racial discrimination during that time, and I'm talking about the early 1900s.
Correct, the Little War.
So I'm glad to see that, and I'm glad to see that this embargo is going to go away. I don't think a small group of people in Miami should be dictating to the American people as to who we should trade with. Again, like I said, China is one of the worst offenders of killing hundreds and thousands of ethnic groups of people in China, but yet we trade with those people. Whereas Cuba, there is no record of killing thousands of people during this century.
You know, thanks, Hector. That's Hector in Bay Meadows.
He brings up a great point because, again, reading this book, I learned that there was a war in Cuba in 1912 called the Little War, and it was racial. People that happened to be of African descent were working and they wanted better working conditions. And basically the military came in and over 6,000 people were died in that rebellion, and they got nothing from it.
Let's go to Leonardo in Jacksonville. Leonardo, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning, Melissa, and thank you for the topic. I just wanted to comment on the reestablishment of relations. I think it's a wonderful thing. I am a Cuban American and have visited Cuba. And the thing that I realized, I went back with my mother as well, who was born there. And what I realized is that the people are the ones that are suffering because of the embargo, not the government. And they welcome the contact. And even since I went in 2001 to now, there have been many changes. A little more freedom, I wouldn't say much, but a little, and certainly more capitalism and entrepreneurship.
Eliana is agreeing.
I think it's wonderful.
Thanks,
it's
Leonardo.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Ilian.
Yes, I totally agree with Leonardo. I saw the same thing, and I had the same conversations that they were saying the embargo only hurts the people, not necessarily the government.
Eduardo in Orange Park. Eduardo, good morning.
Good morning. Yes, the age in Cuba for a male that they have, what they call the military age, is from age 16, I believe, to age 28. If you reach that age, you are not allowed to leave, which is why a lot of families are rushing to get their young men out. You say had the Operation Peter Pan back in the early 60s.
Correct.
So a lot of families sent kids that age group out to keep him away from being in the indoctrination camp. By the way, the myth that Cuba education is free, when you were talking just now about the work camps that students have to go to from the sixth grade on, I started like saying that you can go to UNS for free as long as you work for free cutting the yard, then you're not really getting free education. You're exchanging your education for labor. As far as Cuban having, somebody mentioned, a caller, no records of people being killed. There's been Amnesty International has over 12,000 executions in records. So,
well, thank you for the call.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay. And here's an email from Stephanie in Avondale. As a descendant of Lithuanian immigrants who fled the same type of persecution that Cubans face, I believe opening up relations will be the beginning of the end for this repressive regime. Perestroika in the former Soviet Union eventually paved the way for the great independence movement. Exposing citizens to even a glimpse of freedom inevitably gives them the knowledge and courage to make a change. Lots of feedback on Dreaming in Cuban.
Absolutely fabulous.
And we're so excited to host all of you. Ilian Alfaro Snyder, Dr. Estrella Alfaro, and our own book club blogger Stacy Goldring. Our book club is now in partnership with the Jacksonville Public Library. We're so excited about that. So look for Dreaming in Cuban and special signage on library shelves. Email us with your thoughts at bookclub@wjct.org. And we do we want to say what we're doing next month?
Yes, we are going to read Ragtime, and that is by E.L. Doctorow. So there'll be more information on that. Just go to the library website or check out WJCT. And we've delved into Cuba and the persona and oeuvre of that country. And now we're going to take us to America pre-World War I and really get into the psyche there.
Can't wait. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
We're back in a moment.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
Relax Radio WJCT 89.9 HD3 is your music station, playing the songs you remember best from the Beatles, Elvis, Frank Sinatra, Barbra Streisand, and Motown, 24 hours a day, only on WJCT 89.9 HD3. Learn more at wjct.org/relax.
The Florida legislature is in session, and Capitol Report is your nightly connection to what's happening in Tallahassee as lawmakers debate and decide issues that affect all Floridians, such as expanding health care and gambling, protecting the state's water resources, private versus public schools, and prison reform. Hear Capitol Report each weeknight during the legislative session on this Florida public radio station.
That's Tuesday through Friday nights at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Finally, this hour, lots of excitement around town as the Jacksonville Greek Festival makes a return after 14 years. It's coming up at the fairgrounds. Father Nicholas Lowe of St. John the Divine Greek Orthodox Church and event chair, co-chairman Tom Gibson are here with a preview. Opa, guys!
Yasu!
Oh, I can't wait. It's the Greek Festival. So exciting. How did this come back after such a long absence?
Well, you know, as you said, it's been 14 years since we've done it. It's there was a time where I think we hit a burnout period long ago where a lot of the people worked so hard to get this thing done. And you kind of need to take a break once in a while, step back and reevaluate how you're doing things and let some of the new generation come in. And we've done that. We've been talking about it for years, and we've had a lot of excitement build up and build up. We finally had somebody in our church step up and go, I'm going to run this thing. Let's do it. Let's get some people together. And we are here to finally bring back one of the best cultural events to Jacksonville.
Oh, this is great. Father Nick, this is coming up at the fairgrounds, the 23rd through the 25th. Mm-hmm. People need to bring the family and really soak this up. You're going to get your Greek on big time, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we're so excited because, as Tom was saying, you know, it's been 14 years since we've had a festival here in Jacksonville. And there's so few opportunities really to have a cultural experience. Not all of us are able to kind of travel to Greece and to experience what Greek life is, being in Greece. So you have an opportunity this weekend on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at the fairgrounds to be exposed to not only the food, the culture, the faith. There's going to be just a tremendous amount of activities for children. So I encourage everyone to be out there. It's going to be great.
Let's talk about the food for a minute, because if there's not baklava at this thing, I ain't coming.
I
want my baklava. I want my tzatziki. I want my skewers. And I want my ouzu. And I want it all. I want it all.
I can assure you, and I'm sure Tom will agree, that there will be all of that and so
and
much more.
And more. Spanica pita.
Yes, yeah, that we have. I'll tell you right now, I'm looking at the menu right now. We have souvlaki. We have pasticcio, which is Greek lasagna. We have the baklava. We have the gyros, or a lot of people call them gyros.
Yes, gyros.
Those
yeah.
are out there. We have, you know, the stuffed grape leaves.
Oh, yeah.
All the stuff you think about with Greek
dolmades,
food.
Dolmades, right?
The dolmades. Perfect.
See, I know this stuff. I'm telling
perfect,
you.
Perfect, Melissa. And yeah. then for those of you who want ouzo, and those of you who are old enough to drink, we're actually having a lemon ouzo mojito available.
Get out of here.
Oh, yeah.
So in addition to all of that, this is also, as you said, Father Nick, a chance to take a peek inside the vibrant local community and your culture, your faith, your traditions.
Absolutely.
The Orthodox community.
Absolutely. I mean, the St. John the Divine has been here. We'll be celebrating next year, believe it or not, Melissa, 100 years in Jacksonville. And so we have a history, a long tradition in this community. The Greek festival was one aspect of it. And so, yes, I mean, we're hoping to, once again, impact our community. That's one thing that was one of our mission statements as a parish, is to try to make our neighborhood and our city better. The event of the Greek festival this year is actually the proceeds from that. A portion of them are actually going to go benefit Wolfson's Children's Hospital, and then the rest will also go to help building up our new church home.
Let's talk about that. I've driven by the sign many times. It's it's on Beach Boulevard,
right
near Hodges, right?
Right. It's between Kernan and Hodges on Beach Boulevard. Yes.
And that will be the new home of St. John the Divine.
Yeah, I mean, thank God we've been very fortunate. Our church is growing, and you know, in time, in God's time, we always say, is that, you know, we hope to build a church that can, once again, like our current location, impact our community, just make our neighborhood better, and to be a great service to our community.
But Tom, in the interim, people can come out and just really enjoy this event. Anything else people need to know to mark their calendar for the Greek Fest?
Well, there's a lot going on this weekend. There, when we first did this, there was one event. Now we have other events that are happening in Metro Park. There's going to be Suns games. There's going to be a concert and so forth. So get down early and get parking. And just, you know, Milton Krisovergis and the rest of the committee have done a great job organizing this. Come down, have fun, bring an empty stomach and your dancing shoes, because there's going to be a lot of Greek dancing. We're having live bands. We're having Greek dancers come out to perform. It's just going to be a great cultural event.
It's the return of the Jacksonville Greek Festival Thursday through Saturday at the fairgrounds. Mm-hmm. Come out and enjoy it. It's going to be a lot of fun. Father Nick Lowe, Tom Gibson, great to see you guys. I will drink a toast to you when I'm down there. Thanks
Absolutely.
For coming.
Thanks, Melissa.
Being
Thank
on
you,
the show.
Melissa.
And right now, whether you love First Coast Connect or Diane Rehm, which is up next, we want you to fund your favorites this week here at 89.9. Here's how.
Opa! Right?
Absolutely.
All right.
353-9528.
9528. That's the number to call. We're asking for your pledge of support as we are in our spring pledge drive here at WJCT. Been learning about what's going on this weekend. It's so exciting. There are so many things happening. That's one of the best parts about having this show on Monday through Friday at 9 o'clock. You can plan your weekend and learn about all that is happening in the community during First Coast Connect. It's a great way to be part of the community as well. It's not just a show you listen to, but it's a show you can call in and converse with whoever is on the air. Melissa Ross, of course, does a terrific job hosting the program. It's a jewel, and we hope that if you like First Coast Connect, that you will put a dollar amount on it that you feel is right for you as far as how often you listen to it and how much information you gain and entertainment you gain from the program. And send us that pledge of support to help us continue the great programming here on WJCT. That's 353-WJCT.
You are so correct. It's a lot of news you can use on this program. It either keeps you informed when it comes to election time, or it lets you know that there's a Greek festival mm-hmm. and the Suns baseball. When Carrie right. comes in and tells us all the other stuff that's going on, it's all important information that makes for a better quality of life here in Jacksonville.
Absolutely.
And all along the First Coast. We're a bit close to 22,000, but we're just under that, so we need your support now. As Michelle said, pick the program you like best and attach a dollar amount to it. Maybe it's $10 a month, maybe it's $20 a month. Our most popular level is the $120 level, and if you become a sustainer, that's just $10 a month coming out of your checking account or your credit card. We prefer the checking account. It's easier for us and you, but whatever works for you. Let us know. Visit us online at WJCT.org and go to the support button or our support page, or call us right now at 353-9528. If you're outside the local calling area, we know we have a lot of people listening from Fernandina Beach in the Southern Isles of Georgia all the way down to Gainesville. You can call us at 1-800-722-9528. For a one-time gift of $120, we've got a really nice little portable radio that will get you our new radio station, HD3 Relax Radio. We'll also get you our classical station, HD2, and it will bring you our main station, 89.9, in CD quality, 24 hours a day.
Good stuff.
So lots of options mm-hmm. for you. The important thing is that you give us a call. We're really looking for that big call this morning. We usually get one for 500
right?
or 1,000.
Okay.
That would help bump us up past that $22,000 mark. An $80,000 goal by Friday. So it's important that you give us a call now, and then you can sit back for the rest of this drive and know you did your part by investing in this, your public radio station.
Right. We do want you to help us get the momentum going so we can make that goal. And remember that it doesn't have to be a huge amount either. It can be small amounts, whatever you can afford. It all adds up, and we appreciate just your connecting with us in that way. So whatever amount, don't let it scare you. Don't worry about it being a big, complicated process to make a pledge. It's very simple. Whatever amount is right for you, we do appreciate it. It's a community-supported public radio station, so that's why every pledge is important. So give us a call. Again, you can go online to WJCT.org and hit that support button, or you can call us right now at 353-WJCT.
It's never been more important. We remind you that you are listening to WJCT 89.9 Jacksonville, Florida. Call us now at 353-9528, and thank you so much.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.